Welcome to episode 181 of the Cultra Trail Running Podcast. And I'm Jason Hardrath, the lucky guest. And I'm going to talk about climbing Washington's 100 tallest peaks, a film called Journey to 100 about chasing 100 FKTs and whatever random shenanigans we can come up with along the way.
Cultra Trail Running Podcast. Running. Culture.
All right. All right. Well, welcome everybody to the Culture Trail Running Podcast. I'm your host, Art Byram, and I am joined today by two members of the Culture crew. I have Jimmy McCaffrey.
What's up, fam?
And I have Evil Becky Burke.
I have to say that usually I joke and say that was the smoothest butter, but I think this time it really was the smoothest butter. Yeah. That was good. That was such a good intro. I almost interrupted and I didn't interrupt, which made it even better intro. Jason was on fire. I'm excited. This is and good.
Years of teaching kids has prepared me for this moment.
All right. We are like three like crazy children. So we're like herding cats.
Do you know what's smoother than butter though? That Becky just said the analogy. I was going to say, I can't believe it's no butter.
Very good. Hey,
it's much guys, smoother.
Before we get into it, I just want to let people know who might not have listened to the podcast before. I got to go through my little spiel here. The little
our legal disclaimer, so we don't get sued.
That's right. I mean,
Fred's especially because we don't have Fred.
I know right. We don't have our mouthpiece today, but we're going to try to stay out of trouble. So, for those listening for the first time, the Culture Trail Running Podcast is a place where we can get together and discuss all the fun shit that happens on the trails that most normal people don't care about. Our headquarters are located in the belly of the Beast Coast, Glastonbury, Connecticut. So most of our stories involve Northeast trail running or Northeast trail runners. The language that we use is explicit and raw, so do not listen to this with your kids. Unless you want them out running in the mountains, swearing, eating all sorts of weird Swedish fish that are stuck in their packs for maybe a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden they find them and they're grateful to have them, and they're like, holy shit, look what I found. So if you want them to turn out like that, that's great. You can do that.
You just literally described my childhood. So we didn't have trail running podcasts in the early 80s. So you're doing great, Art.
Look, I found this gum underneath my chair.
So what you guys are saying is we've become the people our parents warned us about.
Exactly.
We've exceeded their expectations. So this is really exciting to have Jason. Welcome back to Cultra. Glad to have you here.
It is absolutely a pleasure to be back. We had a lot of fun last time. I think we're going to do it again.
For those who are, those who maybe have not heard it. So if you go back to episode 110, it was just over a year ago. I think back in January of 2021, Jason was getting ready to, or kind of had his eyes, I guess at that point you had your eyes set up for the, for your 100, you were going after the 100 FKTs. For those of you who don't know what an FKT is, get the fuck out of here. At this point, right?
But we're serious.
This is not the podcast.
Just turn the episode off.
That's right. So at that point you would been, I think I told you this at the time, is that like I had you on the show thinking, well, here's a guy who has a lot of volume going, right? And I kind of expected you to be like, oh yeah, I ran around my block 12 times and somehow got somebody convinced to make that an FKT. And then I did this. And then, or you could have been like just paddling your douche canoe harder than I do, which is hard to believe, but I wanted to find somebody who could. But we didn't find that. What we found what I felt to be a great connection. More ways than running. I think we talked about like some childhood things that you and I really connected on, and I think all of us did with the ADHD, what that was like to grow up with that, and what that experience was like. And it's, you know, and how that plays into running, actually, you know, so, you know, it gives you the ability to hyper-focus and also be very, you know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. It makes you a tough taskmaster, you know, because like sometimes out on the trails, you're not saying, oh, you'll do fine. Just go ahead. You're like, come on, fucker, get up that hill. Yeah. You know, let's focus here. Come on, get your shit together. You know, so you have a, you know, at least I do. I have a lot of different voices kind of carrying me on the trail. So it was, you know, I think it was good to kind of hear that I'm not the only one that's, you know, that's experiencing that kind of stuff. And I think it was something that our listeners identified with as well. So
it was a pleasure to be able to chat about that with a group of people who understood and could commiserate with some of those frustrating feelings of being the kid who constantly fucked it up, like all the time, whether it was friendships or school or, you know, parent expectations. That leaves a little bit of baggage to carry around. And yeah, sometimes that is a voice in the head that, you know, can be channeled for good out on the trail, or can sometimes tear you down if, you know, the monster gets out of the cage. So, yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it's kind of like, I find that when, cause that definitely happens with me, you know, like the first thing I do when I trip or stop my, you know, if my nutrition kind of falls off and I kind of let it slip, I'm like, come on, you know, and I'm like tough on myself. But then I think there is that bit of awareness sometimes where you can, it's like leaning into it some too, where it's like, oh yeah, look what you're doing here. You don't have to be this tough one. You know, you're doing it again, right? And you're, you know, try to just get a little bit of, you know, a little bit of awareness with that. And it's kind of like a lot of ultra runners talk about experiencing the beast, or experiencing the bonk or the pain cave, or however you want to refer to it. You know, some people spend their whole time running like, I don't want to feel uncomfortable, or I don't want to feel that really, you know, that gut suffering, you know, but some of the most successful runners are runners who seek that, you know, where when they're out there, I mean, once you're doing that, you kind of know that you're working. So you have a problem to solve, you know, so.
Gotta decorate that pain cave, you know?
Yeah. So maybe we can just kind of talk about that a little bit. How did, you know, what was it like when you were out there, you know, doing the hunt, you know, doing your 100 at the Bulgers? And again, maybe people haven't heard all about that, but that's, you know, the 100 highest peaks in Washington. For lots of people, that's a lifetime goal, or certainly a goal that takes years and decades in many cases. So you went at it very hard, knocking it out in just under 51 days. So what was what was the range of mental, you know, the peaks and valleys of that, so to speak?
Great pun, great metaphor there.
Yeah. I was like, oh, nice. I like that.
You like that back? Yeah.
He didn't even flinch or pause. He didn't hesitate. He's just like, happy I'm accident. gonna drop this right here. I mean, obviously, like being 99 FKTs in and having, you know, obviously, you know, the numbers hung up behind me, a background and in racing for a while, it's like, I knew there was going to be a gamut of emotion that I was going to wade through. I was going to be walking through the muck and through the gauntlet, through the fire, so to speak. Perhaps all those things mixed together. Mm-hmm. And so like mentally, in a way, I was prepared for what I was signing up for. And there's a portion where they actually, a part of the film crew came out with me for a section of the Bulgers. And you know, they captured me, some audio of me in this just totally exhausted state, talking like about how this was, you know, like the hardest thing I'd ever done. And but also like, that's what I signed up for. Like, you know, even in that exhausted, sleep deprived state, it's like, I'm like, yeah, no, this is part of why I'm here. Like, I didn't come here to have it not be a full human experience, to feel the full gamut of human emotion. And yeah, there were a moment, I can think of a moment where all of my support crew had to be gone for one reason or another. So I was basically self-supported, and a fire broke out that closed Highway 20, one of the primary access routes through to mountains I still needed to climb. And there was this giant questioning in my mind, because I was trying to find information like, okay, the road's now closed. So at a minimum, I have to drive 8 hours to get to what would have taken me 15 minutes to get to. Mm. But is the fire at one of the peaks that I still need to climb? And is that land closed? And therefore, is this whole FKT done and over? And, you know, being sleep deprived and your body's hurting and you've been dragging yourself out of bed for 30 whatever days already to repeat this cycle of exhausting yourself and climbing, you know, tens of thousands of vertical feet through bushwhacking terrain. Because only if you're generous with your definition of a trail, only 4 of the peaks actually have trails that go to the top. And that's if you're very generous. Most people say 2 of them. So it's like, this isn't like, oh, I'm going to roll up to the trailhead and I'm going to go up a trail. I'm going to tag the summit and I'm going to go back down. It's like, no, full on. And another thing about the state of Washington is it's a temperate rainforest, one of the only ones in the world. So it's not, you know, bushwhacking isn't like what I might refer to as open forest walking. The humorous way we refer to it there is there's a lot of BW5, which is a reference to WI5 or water ice climbing. And the more the number goes up, the more insane the climbing is. So 5 is like, you're most likely going to die. And that's the bushwhacking you're doing in the state of Washington. W5, where you're sometimes going down 60 degree slopes and you slip and your feet are hanging there as you grab a tree. Like, it's full on terrain. And you're just waking up day after day to go through this and do this stuff. And then just being like, oh, all of that, is it for nothing? Is it over? Has a fire shut me down? Which, you know, 6 months of planning, a huge portion of the planning on the front end was, how can I do these peaks in an order that minimizes the risk of a fire shutting them down? So what stuff catches on fire the earliest and most often? And I'm going to climb those peaks as quick as I can first, and then go to the lower fire danger stuff, even though I might have to like cross glaciers with crevasses in a worse time of year, because kind of banking on my skill being able to find a way around versus, you know, climbing routes in optimum condition and risking a fire, which there's no way around. So it's like this moment I'm alone. You know, it was kind of, you know, like that textbook hero character, like all of the friends who used to be in the entourage are now gone and they've got to face that like moment, that harrowing moment where it's like, is this where the hero crumbled? It was kind of weird. It was like one of those moments. It's like, here I am alone and now a fire breaks out.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that was, that was a lot to navigate through, to find that information and to keep my head centered through the sleep deprivation and all that, and to figure out a way around and figure out I could still have access and then drive all the way around and then still get out there and go tag that next peak. And I can think of the stress and just how burned out I was, and then finally getting started down the trail. And it, you know, I'd lost pretty much that whole day of daylight already. And so I round this bend right as the sun is setting, and the first peak of the group of three I had to get to, which were near this fire, came into view as sort of that, you know, golden hour light was hitting it towards sunset. And just this feeling of like, yeah, everything's going to be okay. Like, I'm right where I should be, kind of washed over me. And I just remember that just being like, okay, here we go. Even though it was like all smoky and I was breathing smoke and all that, it was still like, let's get this done.
Wow. Now, is that in, you have to excuse my geography here and maybe even the timeline, but I'm thinking that was that around the same time as the fire that was in Oregon there, the bootleg fire? Is that, or what am I thinking? There was a huge fire there.
There was, Oregon. Summer. Oregon really burned up. Let me see. I forget the exact timeline on the assortment of Oregon's fires. But I started June 13th and finished August 3rd. So I basically climbed all through the fire seasons, the ones that happened in Oregon and Washington and Canada too, had smoke blowing in from there on some days.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a bit of smoke involved. Had some great bluebird clear days too. So I really can't complain. Hardly got rained on at all, which is very unusual for the state of Washington. And also hopefully isn't a testament to the future, because then everything's going to burn. But had a really dry year there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely was. So
reading this thing here that this guy Randy wrote on the Bulger's FKT page, this is one of the coolest things. Can I gloss over this real quick?
Yeah.
This guy Randy wrote, he said, "I do not do FKTs myself, but climb in Washington and followed his climb on social media, so I am throwing my two cents here. As Jason states, this was roughly 870 miles and 412,000 feet of gain in under 51 days. These stats alone are flooring. But then you take a step back to consider that these are not just peaks you drive to and then walk up a trail. In fact, only four of the 100 have trails at the top. So the number of insane Washington bushwhacking miles, creviced glacier miles, miles of fourth and fifth class terrain, route finding, multiple multi-day deep backcountry pushes, coordinating three different boat rides to gain access to peaks, the closed road to North Cascades National Park, the closure of Highway 20, the record heat wave that rolled through, the fire closures he honored, making his access harder, the border closure he honored, making the Chilliwack significantly harder to access, and the incredible level of detailed logistics to even start this effort, and suddenly the significance of this undertaking sinks in. Some of the individual mountains he climbed in a day, or even two in a day, are regularly 2 or 3 day trips by themselves. The other crazy part is there was no precedent of these peaks being doable like this. Many people doubted he would succeed, even laughed at his hubris of such an attempt. I will admit, I was one of them. But his persistence and dedication won me over. It is my opinion that this is one of the more inspiring and significant things to happen in the mountains, especially in the Pacific Northwest this year. Kudos to you, Jason." That is
awesome.
Some of the best praise I've ever read. Yeah, that's it's emotional. I got a little emotional reading that. It's pretty freaking awesome. So,
and that's the thing that I was overwhelmed with over the course of this effort is, I mean, obviously there were some doubters and some people who were openly, critical, oh, there's no way you'll get the permits, or there's no way you'll climb, or you're going to fail, or whatever. There's one guy who he's like, "Oh, I'm super excited to follow this." And then underneath in parentheses, he's like, "Actually, I just can't wait till you give up when you try to climb Custer."
Oof.
And it's just why do you got to be that way?
I love, that's what people are like. I love when people are like, "Ultra runners are the best people." I'm like, "Have you met any ultra runners?"
Well, to be fair, this was a mountaineering community.
Was it Summit Post or one of those websites? Those dudes are awful, aren't they?
I mean, not all of them. There's always a few though. But that's one of the things about this effort, over the course of doing it, was these different communities, it became almost their effort, right? Not just my own. Randy mentioning being won over, and these people that were kind of critical or hesitant or not believers, slowly getting to where it was and then one of the guys who had been really critical about not getting the permits or whatever, at the end was like, "Wow, this was a truly amazing undertaking. Congratulations." And to see kind of that turning of the tide, and then just the immense support that it got out of both from mountaineering and running communities out of the Pacific Northwest when it came to the FKT of the year vote. It was pretty rad to just see how those communities had rallied around this undertaking and kind of bumping the needle, so to speak, with this effort, where previously it had been done in 410 days, which is a very different undertaking than doing it in 50 days. To sort of take these mountains and put them in that mix, it is possible, if you're willing to endure what's necessary and you have the skill sets and you're willing to do the planning, to view these mountains in the same way people view the Colorado 14ers, that it's something that you can take a season and go out, and if you're willing to put in the work, you can go knock it out. And so it was, yeah, it was cool. It was cool to do that and to sort of leave that mark on the community. And sort of, yeah, I guess it sounds cliche, but redefine what was perceived as possible.
Yeah. Right on. I mean, that's, that's an amazing thing. Just, you know, just that statement there, because I think people don't think, you know, I mean, like when you started saying, oh, you know, all the naysayers and everything like that. I mean, what does everybody always say? You know, I could, you know, I couldn't drive that far. I mean, that's the, you know, that's what right, you always hear. Right. But I mean, they certainly couldn't drive the car up that high either. So, yeah. But 8,000, you know, so you averaged over 8,000 feet a day, right?
Yeah, I think that's about what that comes out to. I did. I actually haven't run that calculation.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's, you know, that's very cool. Now wow. Here's, but what's, I mean, it is really incredible just because like now, if you were to give somebody your background and say, okay, here's a runner with ADHD, and he came out with this plan somehow, planned it in enough detail to be able to execute on that many different, you know, for 51 days in a row, got it done, you know, got it done. So, I mean, that's quite a feat in itself. I mean, given the, probably the extra challenge that you were faced there, you know, to be able to connect all those dots in more ways than one. So,
I mean, I guess, I mean, there's part of me that wants to, that, you know, that the mountain guide, I'm a professional mountain guide as well. I started a few years back and, you know, the mountain guide in me wants to be like, yeah, this is totally not something someone should expect to get up off the couch and go do. Like there are so many situations on rock and on glacier that you genuinely like could kill yourself regardless of how fit or strong you could, there's deep for, you know, that bushwhacking I mentioned, like if you don't know how to do navigation, you get lost out there and best case scenario, search and rescue finds you. Worst case scenario, we can imagine. You know, and, you know, I think like that is something to consider when like considering this. I just feel like I need to say it because it's like I don't want someone to think like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna go out and I want to inspire people to go do things like this. Mm-hmm. But also it's like there's a deep set of skills that go along with an undertaking like this. I put in years of rock climbing and years of glacier travel and years of like spending time in these environments and navigating. You know, knowing what I would do if, oh, my phone died and my watch died. What landmarks have I memorized on the way in and out of here that I can use my compass and my map and get out of here. You know, skill sets like that, where I'm not just like, oh yeah, I'll just push a button and somebody will come rescue me. You know, which, you know, is the beauty. Like, I don't want to downplay like that people who do this should definitely carry a spot tracker or whatever similar device that allows an SOS beacon to be initiated. But like, I think one of the downsides of living in an era where we do have, you know, a push button perception of search and rescue is you think you can, you know, some people might fall into thinking that they can just step out into environments like this. And it's like, oh, I have the button. It's like, if you're at the bottom of a crevasse, that button is not going to reach the satellites.
Yeah.
And that's assuming that you're present mentally to push the button at that point. So yeah, it's definitely a very serious undertaking. On the planning end, on the execution end, on the skills end, on the bringing proper gear and understanding like which days to bring which gear. But all those things considered, like, man, what an amazing undertaking. What a beautiful way to spend time out in nature. I mean, to be able, and that's what kept me going through the whole thing really is my ADHD mind would just sort of orient itself around like, oh man, I can't wait till this big challenge. I can't wait to climb the 2000 foot vertical rock, fifth class terrain of the Northeast Buttress on Goody. You know, like I would just think of these different things that would be happening. Oh, this glacier that we're going to traverse is going to be epic. Like there's going to be crevasses that you could throw school buses into and never see them again. Like being out in terrain and seeing things like that and walking right through the belly of the beast. Like to be able to look forward to those things was, you know, one of the fuels that kept me going through this whole thing is that I knew I was going to just have my jaw dropped day after day after day. You know, at the opening of the film, they capture me at the outset of the first, at the first trailhead, taking the first steps. It's like, oh man, just going to be climbing mountains. Like life is going to be so simple. And, you know, that was me just sort of like feeling the weight come off my shoulders of like, I put 6 months of planning into this of Zoom calls with mountaineers who live in Washington. Cause I'd only climbed two of these peaks prior. 98 of these peaks were on-site climbs where I was figuring out the route and the beta while out there actually doing the FKT.
Wow.
And so I spent, you know, just countless hours on Zoom calls and exchanging information by email and looking over trip reports just to put together what mountains could be linked together and which way was the most efficient to climb each mountain, which ways I could potentially do because of the skill set I have as a rock climber and as a mountaineer that maybe most people wouldn't be able to do. And just putting that all together. And finally just being like, okay, now I get to go see if I'm right. Like now here's the hypothesis. The theory says it can be done in 50 days. Now we go test. And there's just something that felt incredibly light in that moment as well, that it's like, now it's just the doing. I don't have to do all the worrying. Now I'm just going to go look forward to each little step along the way.
Yeah, there is. So as somebody who struggles a lot with ADHD, when I have the thing that makes me happiest in life is a checklist that I know is solid. Because when I have a checklist in front of me, it's like when I'm packing for an ultra, if I have that list, that's my good list. I know that I'm going to have everything I need to deal with whatever happens in a reasonable, you know, within reason. You know, I'm not going to forget like, oh, I got here and I forgot my shoes, you know, which, you know, I've done that a couple of times, you know, or I've forgotten my socks or my gloves or my hat or my watch, you know, whatever. Oh, you know, I've forgotten some pretty stupid things. Past weekend, I showed up without some of my key fuel. You know, I had a full bladder, but I didn't have my bag of tailwind, you know, I didn't have the tailwind ready to go.
One of my first Ironman training partners flew to an Ironman event on the wrong weekend.
Oh, gosh. He's making us look good, right?
First place, right? First place. Wow. Course record.
Full start. Oh,
that's rough.
Oh my gosh. That makes for a good story. Expensive enough, right?
Oh wow.
Yep. It definitely is a good reminder that we can all make mistakes. And I haven't made one quite that big. I always have that one on him. Yeah. But it's like,
oh wow.
That's great. So how is, so if people wanted to see the film, how would they, you know, where would that happen? What's the best way to do that?
So we're going to do a little film tour. And that's probably not the best way for most people to see it, but we're actually going to do a little film tour. Athletic Brewing is the company that I partnered with to make this film. And we're going to do a showing in Brooklyn. Let me get my date straight here. April 9th. And then we're going to do one in Denver on April 23rd. I think that's the Saturday of that week. And then Portland the weekend following that, which would be April 30th, and then Seattle on May 7th. So if someone happens to live in one of those areas,
And I'm assuming you don't mean Portland, Connecticut.
No, sadly, no.
That's where Becky lives.
I do mean Portland, Oregon.
You mean the cool Portland. I know. Everyone's
party
like,
at Becky's house.
And I'm like, yeah, no, not Portland, Oregon. Portland, Maine? No, not Portland. What other Portland is there? Well, anyways.
Is there a Portland to Portland event of some sort? I thought there was some kind of ride or something.
Ooh.
Yeah. There we go.
That just sparked an idea.
There is now. Thanks. You said it. Now we got to do it. So
I'm literally writing that down. Anyway, so go on.
Those will be live showings of the film with a live question and answer with me there afterwards. Two of them, Dylan Bowman will be the co-host of, so I'll get to have conversations with Debo, which will be pretty rad. He's kind of well known in our circles. And then on the following, I'm going to get this day wrong, the following week. So whatever sometime during the week after May 7th, Outside TV is going to release the digital watch it at home release to everybody. Mid-May will be the big digital release and digital push of the film. And it sounds like we're trying to figure out some kind of a live event for that as well, where maybe there'll be a digital question and answer of some sort with me as well for that. So for those who aren't in any of those four physical places, that'll be the best bet is mid-May, the release on Outside TV
Journey to 100. People that are like close to those areas, like how would they, like, is there a website that we could go to learn about like where in these locations it is?
Should
we just go to Brooklyn and hang out?
Just go to Brooklyn, go hang out in Brooklyn.
I'm Googling it right now. I'm trying to find. Here we go.
I think there is a landing page that should go live. It might already be live, or it should go live soon on Athletic Brewing's website. Obviously,
that's a cool name. Athletic Brewing.
They only do non-alcoholic beer, which is kind of cool.
And they're delicious. Yeah, they're really good.
Yes, I've had them. Really, why? That's why the name sounds familiar. Ugh. Yeah.
So actually, crazy side story here. I don't know. I just enjoy it. But my van broke down right before I was going to start. Like my adventure van broke down right before I was going to start the Washington Bulgers, and so I had to scramble to find something different. And Athletic Brewing's founder and CEO, Bill Schufelt, was like really stoked on what was happening and like kind of invested in the story and like they wanted to see this happen. So they helped me get into a new van. Like, cool thing. Cool thing for them to do. Like, there's no reason they had to do that, but they helped me quickly get into a new van. In turn, I put some Athletic branding on the side of it. And people will see that in the film in case they wonder, like, why is this guy driving around in a beer van? and so there's the story why. You heard it here first. And what ended up being really cool through the process, this is the amazing part, you know, the teacher in me loves this because like I teach about this stuff as a, you know, health and PE teacher, like these decisions and how they impact our lives. Literally almost every trailhead throughout the Boulders, either myself or Ashley, my girlfriend who was helping support and drive, would have somebody come up to us and be like, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I really loved your product. It helped me turn my life around. Like, holy cow. Like it's really not hard to want to be a part of something where just because somebody sees the branding on something, they want to walk up and thank you. It was a pretty cool, like, side. I don't think I've talked about this before, but it was just such a cool, touching thing to have these people. And I'd have to be like, I'm not the founder. I didn't make, I'm just an athlete. Like, thank you. I'll pass the word on, but it wasn't me, because it was just so raw and real that you had to like be honest with them too. Like, I didn't found it. I can't lie. Yeah. Like,
but that is really, really cool. I love that. Yeah,
it makes it really easy for me to be happy that I'm associated with something that's sort of redefining what's cool and not cool. Cause, you know, like O'Doul's, it used to be like totally uncool. And now everybody's like, Athletic Brewing, I love that. Like, well, their IPAs are awesome.
It's, you know, it's great. It's like, it's the only time I've ever had like one beer. You know what I mean? Like, I have an Athletic and I'm like, I don't really want another one. But whenever I drank alcohol, I always drank like 50. So that's, you know, that's why I don't drink anymore. It's like, I could have an Athletic and I'm like, cool, I'm just going to have one. Like, so it's pretty cool. It's, you know, and it's like, yeah, I see tons of people drinking them now and I'm like, oh, it's like cool to drink non-alcoholic beers again, like, or now or whatever. Yeah.
I think it's been cool in Europe for a while, but now in the United States, you can be like, oh, I'm going to have an Athletic. And people are like, oh yeah, Athletic.
That's right. My buddy of mine ran Berlin and they give you non-alcoholic beers when you finish Berlin Marathon.
Yep. It's been a thing. It's been a thing in Europe. I've heard that even coaches there like recommend their athletes have a non-alcoholic beer at the finish line.
It's crazy.
But enough about that.
Well, I thought I had a little bit more on that maybe. buckle up here. No, I think I heard that one of their brewers may be an ultra runner in Connecticut.
Oh, true.
There's some
John Walker
and the one guy Kevin I think was a brewer. Last name starts with Kevin Henschel, I think his name is. Right. there's a guy, Kevin. I think he was going to come out and do Blue to Blue a couple years ago and then couldn't make it, whatever. But he's shown up to some like West Rock Ramblers runs, and he's brought some product and stuff like that. Cause they started out of Stratford and they started out of Connecticut and now they're in San Diego and now I think they sold part of the company or they got a huge, they're like a multi-million-dollar thing now.
They sold the Iron Man.
Yeah. Right. No,
sponsor an Iron Man event. It's been crazy. So I started sort of interacting with them just at the ambassador level, 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago now. And it was just the tiny single Connecticut brewery. Just ended up getting connected to them through a podcast host who's like, hey, you want to try some? I was like, sure, non-alcoholic beer, okay. Ended up liking it. He's like, oh, you want to be on our ambassador team? So got started. And now, they've opened up the San Diego brewery. Now they've opened up another East Coast brewery that might also be in Connecticut that's like three times as big. And so they went from basically being this tiny brewery that shipped to a few different states to now they ship internationally. Mm. And it's been a wild ride to be a part of something that's growing. I think technically they're the fastest growing brewery, if not in North America, in history. And they don't do any alcoholic beer, which is like, what? Mm. What is the world coming to?
There you go.
Well, yeah, it's in Stop and Shop now. It's in all the big chain places here.
So the takeaway here, everyone, is go try some.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. So I was listening to another podcast. I listened to the FKT podcast, or I did. So, and I heard that they were purchased. I listened to it on the day that it came out. So it was kind of like when Buzz got on there and said, "We have some news for you."
Nice.
Oh, Buzz.
And it's isn't this interesting?
Buzz and Peter, name a more iconic duo. Okay. I'll wait.
I don't think there is. I mean, have you seen those photos of them that float around on the internet? Right. With the stale sock and
it's so funny because he's like, he sounds just so innocent, but then you hear about the shit that he's done and you're like, so it's like it's pretty amazing stuff. So so they were purchased by Outside. So I just wondered and I haven't heard anything besides that. I haven't really dug that deep into it, but I haven't heard anything on that at all. So I thought maybe you might have an inside scoop
some
kind of scoop you could share.
I mean, where to start? Let's do it chronologically. So the moment it was announced, since my finger's kind of on the pulse of this community, definite shockwaves through anybody that has been involved in the community and put up multiple FKTs, oh no, what does this mean? What's going to happen? Myself, when I started doing FKTs, I'd just gone through a car accident, which basically bankrupted me. It should have, maxed out credit cards, living out of a $600 smoking Astro van and just refused to not go adventure. And it being essentially free to do FKTs was hugely empowering and freeing. And so there's a part of me that still really cares about that for whoever else comes along, that's not well off in their finances. It's not, because race entry fees can be pretty wild these days. Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, not every dirtbag who chooses to like live out of a van can afford that. and so like instantly I was like, oh no, like what if they put it behind a paywall, even a small one? Because I mean, the thing that makes a website with a name fastest known time authentic is that it actually is the home to the fastest known time. And the moment you put like a paywall up and you start charging because you want to make some money on your product, which things cost money, right? That's how the world goes around. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you do that in the wrong way, all those people who are actually really fast, you know, these 20 whatever year olds that are living out of a van and not paying any money for anything, they're going to be like, oh, I'll just post it somewhere else and that's good enough. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Right. So pretty soon you don't actually have a website that has the fastest known times listed on it, which to me is problematic. So that instantly became a worry. And that was conversations I had with, you know, other athletes who were involved in it, like Kelly Halpin and, you know, my girlfriend, she's done like 52 different FKTs as well. Ashley Winchester, conversations with her, emails back and forth with some of the regional editors for FKT, like Alex Bond, who's been very vocal and on a variety of FKT or podcasts regarding FKTs. Just all these conversations and worries, like what decisions are they going to make? Now, luckily, to put that to rest, with every person I've had conversations with, both Buzz himself and people who are actually behind the wheels and the pedals and the mechanisms at outside with this acquisition, so far there is no plan to put anything behind a paywall for it. So, so it seems like that portion of the worry for the community is, at least for now, you know, I, in my mind, I can't help but think like all it takes is one new business person to step in and be like, hey, this seems like a good idea. but for now it is not in the roadmap. It is not in the plan to put FKT behind any sort of a paywall for people who want to submit routes and people who want to submit FKTs. Their primary goal as of now is to integrate their other purchases, Trail Forks, the mapping system, Trail Forks and the mapping system Gaia, into the FKT website experience so that users can have a better mapping experience with the FKT website, which I mean, anybody that's seen the FKT website, it's a basic forms website. I mean, considering it was programmed in Jeff's spare time, it's amazing, but also it's very basic. So it'll be pretty cool to see those sorts of improvements being made so that you can, you know, have some 3D mapping features when you want to like look at an FKT route that's going over mountains. That does add something to route finding and kind of planning out, like if you're looking at multiple GPX files of which way you want to go, to be able to see it in 3D, it makes a difference in how you can make that decision when you're far away. Sure. So I think it'll be cool to see those sorts of improvements happening because they're actually going to have a team of people, you know, programmers instead of one guy doing it in his spare time, that are going to help reprogram some stuff. So I do think there's going to be some big growth as far as that goes. And then there's talk of adding in more sports, which has been a complaint of people before, where I've had people who are rock climbers that have done some like rock climbing type FKTs that still sort of fit the car to car ethic of the FKT style, or the full ascent of a mountain sort of style. But the route they took was too technical. Like it was, you know, 5.11 instead of 5.7. And so FKT wouldn't accept it. And so there's a possibility more of that type stuff will be accepted. You know, for example, no pure bike efforts, even though if you look on YouTube, if you put in the search term fastest known time, half of the videos that pop up are mountain bikers. So it's like they're already using the term, but then you tell them, no, we're not going to house your record, which is what would happen in the past. Cause it's like, no, we're a running record website. Mm-hmm. So it'll be cool. It sounds like there's some openness to exploring, expanding that the number of sports that have their fastest known times housed under the fastestknowntime.com website.
That's cool.
I think the added benefit of that is we're going to get to see this explosiveness and creativity. Like some people consider what I'm doing, where I've mixed like canyoneering and mountaineering and glacier travel to do all these different FKT routes that I've done. I think it's going to be, you know, that 10X going forward, because people are going to be like, oh, I'm going to mix this epic whitewater. I'm going to run this, you know, whitewater canoe, whitewater kayak route down to this point and then climb this mountain. And then I'm going to mountain bike down to, you know, you're going to see these crazy mixtures going forward if that happens.
I think that Kultra has always mixed its running and its canoe paddling. you know, I think we've always mixed those two things together. So, you know, but it is interesting though, because lots of times I do look for, you know, sometimes you look for the bike routes or the creativity that they have, you know, it's just, you know, how can you go wrong by throwing a couple more, you know, more in there. So,
I mean, one simple example is a classic of Wyoming, of the Jackson area, is the Grand Teton Picnic. That, you know, I'm sure that, you know, at least someone here has anybody here heard of that?
Like, Jimmy has.
Wait, is that the one that there's a video I think of like Anton going up in like short, like just no shirt and shorts, and like there's like dudes up there like full mountaineering gear, like they've got like crampons and everything, and he's just like doot 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 doot. Like, is that? No, maybe not.
He did do one that was similar to that. Jimmy. That was the Long Peak Triathlon. He did do one like that, but this one is one basically you bike from Jackson Hole, Wyoming to Jenny Lake. You swim across Jenny Lake. You then summit Grand Teton, go back down, swim back to your bike, and then bike back to town. Wow. You know, so this human powered mountain experience. And for the longest time, that couldn't be housed. Even though that's such a cool like nature triathlon, that couldn't be housed at the FKT website. But you know, now it is. You know, that's one they've taken some small steps. There are some mixed sport things that exist now.
People have to. I think you can't like sit in your silo for your whole life. You know, you have to be open-minded. There were people who were like, oh, what are you going to do? You're going to bottle water and sell it? I mean, that's stupid, you know? And then like, you know, and oh, you're going to run on, you know, that's in the woods. You can't run there. Or, you know, you can mix up trails and roads and you can, you know, it doesn't have to be a pure trail run, you know? I mean, I don't know. I think there's lots of ways to have fun out there. And you don't have to limit yourself just to one thing. I had a question for you though, so you did 100 peaks and a lot of these are, I wondered if it's a possibility that you overlapped any other, were there FKTs that were individual that you might've encountered during your 100?
Yes. There were multiples of the peaks that by themselves or in groups, like a traverse of a ridgeline that tagged five peaks, that by themselves were high enough quality to either already have an established like FKT on the fastest known time website, or there was a recorded fastest time elsewhere. And then out of that assortment of those, I think like four or five of them, I actually ended up beating the time on while I was in route to take down the entire 100 list. It ended up bumping. It ended up messing up as far as like my on the website, number 100 being the Washington Bulgers, because I had to go out and break a few records along the way. Dang it.
My symbolic 100th
was the Bulgers. Dang it.
I just intuitively kind of figured that might've happened there, you know? So I'm glad that we exposed that and got that out there.
You've pulled the curtain off of it. Now everybody knows.
I'm looking at all the picnic routes up on here now, the Yosemite Picnic Triathlon, the Shasta Picnic Triathlon, the Grand Traverse Picnic. Like, this is awesome. Like, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad you are. I'm geeking out on this stuff.
And I was just saying last week, I'm going to tell on myself, oh, this is so douchey. I was like, are FKTs like still a thing? Are people still doing those?
Apparently outside thinks so.
That's what we were talking about, because I was like, oh cool, good for you outside, you're 2 years too late. Now I'm like, such a jerk for saying that. Like, it's actually a good move outside, because they the fact that they're going to open up to, like, I want to see someone do the length of the Connecticut River. It's 410 miles from the Canada border. It's like a beaver pond that turns into this massive river. And if you've ever been to the Connecticut Science Center, there's that thing where you can turn the wheel and it brings you down. They literally brought a drone down the whole length of the Connecticut River. And you can, me and my kid would do it, and you can go forwards and backwards by like turning this wheel.
If you turn that knob fast enough, you have the FKT.
Oh yeah. And it goes like super fast, right? Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because once it gets out to the Long Island Sound, it goes all the way back up and starts again. So like my kid would like do it and he'd be like, look, daddy. And I'm like, oh man, you're time warping, dude. But and that's something I've seen people do it, but they've done it in like an 8-day paddle where they're camping every night. And I'm like, 410 miles. I'm like, you get some endurance athletes that literally, I'm like, that would be freaking amazing. Cause I think
that does sound cool.
There's only like two portages. I think it's like they're right near Holyoke, and then another one in Greenfield Turner's Falls. So two times in Massachusetts, whatever. But like you can do the entire river.
Is it rocky though, Jim? Do you need like a, like what kind of, cause like I have like
a kayak or a canoe.
Yeah. I have a fancy prima donna,
sea kayak or.
Yeah. I have an open, like a, it's called a surf ski.
Yeah. Surf ski.
Actually Buzz is into them. Buzz was talking about surf skis during one of his shows. So yeah.
Well, you could do the Long Island Traverse. Ski. You could go from like Old Saybrook to Hempstead or whatever. I definitely have the boat for that. This is why outside this is a good thing, because there's going to be I think some of that multi-sport stuff can be really cool, because then you can start linking up like people can do cross United States bike ride, but then they can freaking go, you have to go across the Missouri River, like some stuff like that would be insanely awesome to see.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're thinking too small here. Why not just circumnavigate the whole planet, human power?
Exactly. Yes.
Come on.
Wow.
Come on. Who's up? Who's up?
Right. So this is kind of part of the Ricky Gates, mentality here, right? Yeah. I mean, just kind of finding cool stuff and doing that. So, that's really great.
Oh yeah. Somebody's gonna do the whole Earth now. It's gonna be so rad. An Earth triathlon. Sweet.
Triathlon.
And you know what? You could actually start that one a week early. It's okay.
That's right. It's so not really a false start.
Can I ask, so having planned this 100th FKT, and it sounds like there was, some more planning to that kind of went into it. After doing that, was there a low or all right, well, now what do I do? Or was it just like more of a, oh my God, I just did that. Now what can I do? What was the aftermath of that?
So you mean when I finished the actual Bolger's effort itself?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
So yeah, the way I keep coming back to describing, and obviously like there was a film crew there who wanted to interview me at the finish too. And like, they're like, oh, what words can you put to this? What did you learn? What is the experience like? And the way I keep summing it up is the feeling was that of hard work well done. Just this sense of deep satisfaction. Cause it's like, I predicted I could do this thing in 50 days. And then I did it in 50 days, 23 hours and 43 minutes.
That's a 50-day finish.
I got to literally race the clock down the side of Mount St. Helens through down the side of the scree hop and the boulders to be like, I am going to keep this at 50 days. And got to have that as my finishing experience after, 50 days of pushing hard. So like coming across that line and having done it, like knowing that I did it, I just, flopped on the ground and had this deep sensation of hard work well done.
I think that's so great. Like I actually, when you said that, I wrote that down, sense of deep satisfaction. Like that just, to me, that just kind of resonates that's like, I think the ultimate like gift that you can get at the end of something. Like I can't think of something better than that, than to be able to finish and be like, oh, like, yes. Like, and to feel that in your core, I think is so wonderful. And to have that, to know yourself enough that you know what that feeling is, and to name it, and to kind of not just own it, but to really cherish that. That just makes me excited. Like, I love that. That's so cool and awesome. Good for you.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's, and I mean, I don't want people to get me wrong either. It's like, right, it's never about the finish line when we do this stuff. It's about the whole experience along the way. And I mean, I'm glad that there was a sense of deep satisfaction at the end. Like, I'm not disappointed at that. But also, I mean, I got to spend almost 51 days climbing mountains nonstop, and I love climbing mountains. So like all of these memories, you know, I mentioned the Northeast buttress of Goody Mountain, crossing the glacier between, I'm going to space on the name of it, but the glacier between Sinister and Dome Mountain, doing the Bonanza Dark Traverse. It's this razor ridge line of somewhat questionable rock with like thousands of feet dropping off on either side of you. And you're on this like razor ridge, like imagine you're climbing on the back of your couch, but instead of it being your couch in your living room, it's just like drop-offs. And it's just like nearly a mile of just like, and racing the setting sun, like realizing, oh, there's only 3 hours and 30 minutes of daylight left. And the fastest anybody's done this traverse in anybody's trip report is 6 hours. We got to go. Like we're about to do this traverse faster than anyone's done it, 'cause I don't want to be on this traverse in the dark. And then just getting in a flow state and making it happen. Like, all these experiences along the way that were so rich and so full. And that's something I realized about myself. Like, the reason I love doing FKTs isn't to have the record. It's not the finished product, the check mark, the stat. It's that when a clock is running and I go do a difficult thing, I have a more rich and full experience with the difficult thing while I'm in it than if there was no clock. People are like, oh, like, you should slow down and enjoy it. It's like, no, when I slow down, I kind of feel like I'm missing something. It's like, I should be doing something. What should I be doing? But when that clock is running and I know I'm bringing everything I can be to everything that the nature is, like, that's the rich experience for me. That's the flow state inducing experience for me. And so I got to do that basically for 50 days straight. Like, that's the reward. That's the golden memory. Not just the finish line.
Excellent. And after 99, cool. After 99 previous FKTs, I heard you say this was the hardest thing that you have done, correct?
I mean, by numbers, by hours, by, you know, if people ask sometimes though, like, did I have something, like, they almost want there to be something that was beyond anything I'd experienced prior to have happened. And it's like, I search it for that, like, something that was way outside, something that was beyond extreme that I didn't expect. But I don't know. One of the ways I phrased it when I thought, you know, being a teacher, I can't help myself. It was like, it felt like this perfect cumulative exam of everything I'd done prior. Right. I'd raced across fifth class terrain. I'd raced up and down glaciers. I'd done all this different stuff in smaller increments where I'd used the same skill, but in a smaller environment, but I already had the skill. So it was like, I'm going to go do this thing that is all these skills continuously built up on top of each other for 50 days. But it's like stuff I've done before. It's like, I'm testing, am I really as good at putting this all together as I think I am, or am I not? And, you know, that sort of added to, you know, it being an undone record as far as like done in a single season. It amplified it, you know, instead of looking for a highly competitive route that somebody had already like gleaned all but a few seconds off of by optimizing the route perfectly. Instead, I had to like step into this void, this unknown, and be like, okay, there's no record of someone trying to do this in this style before. If I'm as good at what I think I'm good at, like, I'm going to manifest this out of nothing. And that's false, right? It's, I mean, obviously I spent 6 months talking with people who had done little versions and variations of this. So it was built on their shoulders, and I got, it was actually one of the, an excellent moment. The Bulger's list has a banquet that they host every year, because they keep track of everyone who's ever finished the list. I was number 84. Now I think there's 87 people that have finished, and I got to like stand up and basically thank those people. You know, some of them are old timers who like finished the list back in the 1980s. And I got to thank them because everything I did was built on their shoulders, going out and finding this list, finding which peaks, you know, some of them helped find which peaks were the tall ones, named some of the peaks, put the summit registers on the peaks, wrote trip reports about the peaks, started this whole Bulger's thing. And then I got to go through and piece together all the best of the information to make this thing possible. And that, like, to be in a room with the people who helped make a wild thing like that possible, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, wow. That is. That's that really very is. Neat.
It's great. we like to call that, you know, it's great to have that kind of support behind you.
I know where arts go away.
And, you know, a lot of times people don't have support, and, but when you have it, it's a great thing, right? I mean, because we can't, a lot of these things we can't do by ourselves, and we do need other, we do need other people. So it's, you know, thinking about it, it's kind of like a podcast, as a matter of fact, being that we're on one today. You know,
you're something else, Byron.
I know. so I want to, if it's all right, I'd like to just take a moment and kind of recognize the people who support our show here. These are our Patreon supporters, or our listeners, or our this is our room of elders. These are the people who kind of give us that support. So. And they also give us a small monthly donation. So there's a paywall here. No, there's, you can listen for free. So if there's anybody out there, you know, when you bump into a Patreon, be sure to thank them for this. But Jason, can you see the screen okay here?
I do believe I can read that.
Okay. I wondered if you wouldn't mind reading the names of our Patreons.
Tonight. Absolutely. Do I need to make sure to include any hashtags and read off every single number symbol?
Yes. Pretty much the more you
Jason, you do you, bro. Whatever comes out is gonna be perfect.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, this first one's kind of easy. Hashtag Hundo Joe. Thank you. We got $$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$ and do it again? Adam Osmond, Amy Jennifer Hanlon, for a teacher, I'm surprisingly bad at last names. Amy Jennifer Hanlon's daughter. Amy Jennifer Hanlon's friend. Amy Power Mower.
Nice.
Amy like Sorensen.
Yay.
Andy Tidd. Angela Rose. Antone D. Betancourt.
Nailed it.
Perfect.
Asim Putala or Pulitav.
Oh, yeah. Ben nice.
Wonen. Benjamin Griffin. Berkshire Trailheads. Besick Hustle. Bikini what? Chicken. Ooh, I want to meet what? That person.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Gibbs. Bill Odendahl.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Lorenz. Brian Musiak.
Yes.
Bryce Hanelli. Celeste Fong.
A ding dong. A ding dong is silent.
A ding dong silent. Indeed.
Oh, God.
Sherry Bilby.
Sherry Bilby.
The singing is silent, too.
Chocolatey Chip Chip.
Yay.
Chris Rasal. Christina Chinhing.
Perfect.
Clement Chung. Clarice Reinhardt. David Hoople.
Oops. Perfect.
Eat rice, be nice. Eat pasta, run faster. Eat noodles, run with poodles. Eat nochi, run question mark. Are we supposed to fill in for the question mark?
I think you just nailed it here. So
I see what it is. Eat rice, be nice. Eat pasta, run faster. Eat noodles, run with poodles. Eat gnocchi, run smoky.
Oh, that's
get it. Run question mark.
It's a riddle.
It's a puzzle. Yes. Oh my God. It's Wordle. Is it Wordle? I refuse to play Wordle, but a friend introduced me to this game Wordle, and you have to guess the country. They show you the silhouette of the country, and I was kicking ass in it. I was like six straight days like getting it on the first guess because I'm a geography nerd, and then boom, they hit you with one of those like Antarctic, like French overseas territories. It fucking wrecked my it was the worst. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Jimmy lost that his was whole interesting. Concept. he's redefining his identity now.
Check out Worldle.
Okay, I'm a big fan.
Ellie Pell, Emily Mayer, Enrique Tello, Buck Arby's, Gelato. Yeah, that sounds good right now. Jeffrey Miller, J.J. Duran, Jaquez Buck.
Perfect.
Jake Coteen, Jamie Myler.
Perfect.
Jank.
Sorry.
Jen Stack, Jessica Crandall, Jillian Ellefson, Jonathan Gardner, Jonathan Ho, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Trail Charts. beautiful. Joseph Morris Rowe. Just David from Iowa. Justin Kuski. I've talked with him. Hey.
Yeah, you have.
If you're listening right now, what's up, man?
He's the Connecticut king of FKTs.
Yes, he is.
He's our own personal Jason Hardrat. but bald.
Oh, is he bald?
He shaves his head.
I've never actually seen him. I've only written back and forth.
I think he only does it to be more efficient.
I would believe that, actually. Yeah.
That's why we all do it. Choice.
Yeah. I'm getting there.
King of Kerfuffle. Kristen Loter LARPing Handler.
Does everybody get that right except for me?
Law Dog. Is that your lawyer?
He's one of them.
He is one of them.
Half of our Patreons are lawyers, so we can pretty much say and do whatever we want.
Now. Oh, this is awesome. I wish I'd known this.
Yeah, we need it though. That's right here. Just saying, allegedly.
We push the envelope. We go right up to the edge and we kind of like, you know, we're right there.
Hey, you don't see anything from the middle.
Questionable content.
Leanne Zarger. I don't know what those symbols mean. Lenny's mom.
Yeah.
Little baby Bobby Byram.
Byram. Yeah, there you go.
Macy Macho, Mark Kelly, Mark Field, Marty Deshow, Matt Slattery, Matt Nielsen, Michael Dolan, Michael Keo, Michael Lopresti, Michelle Neal. Are the symbols just in there for fun?
Well, no, this symbol is it's pronounced pom pom.
Oh, I see. Pom pom Neil. Microscopic porcupine.
Mm-hmm.
Monkey stuffer. That sounds like an interesting human being.
She's so interesting.
She.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Makes it even better.
Oh, yeah. Just saying.
All right. Okay. All right. This one's going to be difficult to pronounce.
Mm-hmm.
Name?
You got it perfect. Dude. You nailed it.
That was perfect.
That is exactly how it's pronounced.
Oh my gosh, that is. That's awesome.
Nicholas DeCio, Niall Zacharias, Pete Faulkner, Peter Kao, powered by Pop-Tarts, Princeton Mountain Running Club, Richard runs trails on YouTube, Ron Lacandro,
come on down,
Ross Balick.
It's pronounced Sally, Bada-Bapa.
Bada-Bapa. Thank you for that. Now that you say it, I can see it in the in the phonics. Hooked on Phonics worked for me.
I'm loving it.
So Becky said that to the race director of a race a little while ago. And we were like, he was like, oh, this is Ross Bada-Ba. And he was like, wait, Bada-Ba. And like, that was one of the funniest moments ever. Cause we had all run 40 miles. So our brains were all like wrecked. And she was like, oh yeah, this is Ross
Bada-Ba.
This is the best list ever.
Yeah, right.
Sally Campbell.
Camp Bell.
One more time. Camp Bell. Sam Kirk of the Enterprise.
Nice.
Very good.
Sarah Porras.
another one of our lawyers.
Only episode on TJ Maxx OnlyFans.
Ooh. Jimmy Max.
I have an OnlyFans. That's right.
Oh, you have an OnlyFans?
We were gonna start doing it was gonna be foot pics only, but my feet are really gross. And
People could be into that.
And then I have naked pictures. I have naked pictures and naked footage of me running through Death Valley from last summer. So I was gonna put that up. You know, $9.99. You guys can see everything. All the jibbles. Wait, what do you call them? Becky Jibbles?
And jabbles.
Bojangles and jibbles, right?
Oh, yes. Your Bojangles, yes.
Oh, delightful. Simon, Cornelius, and Cougar are best for different reasons.
Edit. We had a call-in contest. We had our listeners call in and let us know what Simon C.
Edit,
what the C stood for.
Becky, did you call twice?
Yes.
You did.
Did you like my responses?
But did you call us different people?
I was coming up with two responses for the C.
Did you build a whole different personality for each of your responses?
No, that would have been so much funnier if she did. That would have been perfect.
I know.
You could have called up as like an old lady. You could have been like, I like Simon's cute hair. He's like,
What would the old lady's name be?
Yeah, what would the old lady's name be, Beck?
I know. What would it be?
Ethel?
I don't know. Ooh, the Ethel would be good.
This is Ethel Burke.
Ethel Burke.
No one would know it was me. Yeah, right.
Ethel Burke. It's kind of like one of those, it's kind of like a Hobbit meme.
Where's Ethel? Like
Ethel Burke. Oh, he's having second breakfast.
All right, this next one I know nothing about. Steep Endurance.
Ooh.
The Lazarus Crew, straight out of the Bible. Tom Staradage.
Great. Perfect, because the J is not silent.
Nailed it.
Emphasized.
People will know his name when he wins Western States this year.
There we go. Tony Banana.
Perfect.
Ultra Walker.
Yeah.
Yay.
Walt Drop the Hammer.
Mm.
William Jera. And Mikuk Dest in the Rear.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that is
perfect.
I think, and that was actually about 20 minutes faster than we usually do when we read it. So I think it was close to the FKT. I can't guarantee it. But
gonna submit this to the FKT website.
Well, you know,
absolutely.
I think you could. Except that right now I did happen to go onto the website to see how many FKTs you had. And I couldn't help but notice.
Okay.
Becky, now I don't know if you were here during that conversation. Becky, could you guess how many FKTs he might have? If I were to guess how many he would have.
Oh God, 112.
Absolutely.
I knew it. As soon as he said
Art's favorite number.
Yeah.
He's 112.
Really? Yeah.
He's a little weird like that.
Art's weird, yeah.
No, it's like
I'm gonna ask the question I shouldn't ask. Why?
Oh, yes.
No, that's perfect.
You know what? I'm glad that you asked, Jason, because most people do ask. I mean, well, want to ask, so I usually answer.
Indirectly related to Art's childhood trauma.
No, so we have a run that I put on here called the Cut 112. Ooh. And so it's 112 miles of Connecticut's tough, arguably Connecticut's toughest trails from Massachusetts border. And then it cuts right down the middle of the state and goes to the Long Island Sound. So it's a point to point run, all but probably, I guess, maybe 8 or 9 miles of roads, but everything else is on trails. And it's great, you know, and it's weird for me. 112 has been a weird number. I've had a couple other runs that I've done. Like I did a 24-hour race and my longest one turned into a 112. And then we ran a road course to the Massachusetts border and then back to the Long Island Sound, but it was a more direct route. And somehow that turned into 112.
So it's less that 112 is your favorite number, and it's more that you're 112's favorite human.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh
my God. We're getting t-shirts made. Oh my God. I'll send you some of the proceeds.
That is perfect, great. Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So I got to ask now, Jason, what do you think is, what's next for you here?
Oh man. Well, I'm probably cured of my ADHD and I'll stop all forms of movement. be completely done with doing FKTs forever. And retire to a white picket fence and sunsets on the beach.
Nice.
No, I'm helping mentor a couple of kids that I call them kids, they're in their 20s, their early 20s, but they've taken down a couple of my FKTs from those 99 I did along the way to get to the Bulgers, and got them connected with some resources, some support. And then a guy out of New Zealand, kind of wild, he programmed a whole website that's doing 3D live tracking. That's right, 3D live tracking. So not just the dot watching where it moves across a flat map, and not just looking at your Strava file in 3D once it's done, but mixing the two. You can watch, as right now only Nathan has started, because they've chose that one of the guy's name is Nathan, the other guy's name is Travis. Nathan is a really great skier as well. He's basically good at every sport. He's one of those people you kind of want to hate, but then he ends up being a really nice person.
Yeah.
He's just he climbs like 5'13". He runs ultra marathons faster than I do. He skis. He can like huck cliffs and ski down nearly impossible couloirs. Like just whatever sport he does, he's just straight epic. So he chose to start with a skiing style to do this SPS list, which stands for the Sierra Peak Section List. It's the list of 247 peaks of the Sierra Nevada mountains in California and Nevada. And they're going to attempt to be the first ones to take down the entire list in a single year. Nathan has already started and is 45 peaks into it. Travis will wait until the snow melts and then start his run and hope to beat. They're going to climb a bunch together in the middle, but then Travis hopes to climb the final peaks faster than Nathan was able to do them on skis, and then beat Nathan's record fairly immediately after he holds it, which probably the fastest turnover rate of any record of this size. It's a wild undertaking. It's for real. It's full on. I mean, anybody that's climbed Sierra's peaks in California, like it's real rock climbing and real like exposed terrain, and you're out there.
Wow.
So it's really exciting to be kind of a part of this and like, you know, helping these fellows along. I would join them, except no matter which way we sliced it, it doesn't fit into a scholastic summer. And I wasn't willing to just say peace to my students and go be a full-time dirtbag to go knock the list out. So it felt like I got to pass the torch off and inspire some young fellows to take on a huge project. Since they don't have careers yet, they're just kind of working odd jobs and living out of their vehicles to chase climbing dreams and stuff. So it's like, hey, why not try this?
I think that's so great that you're like that, where you're not like, I don't want anyone to get this, that you're like, hey, go for it. You know, go do it. I think that's so that's inspiring. And I think something that all of us should want to be like, just want to be like you.
Oh, geez. I mean, I don't know. I've always been inspired by that quote, like the rising tide lifts all ships. And when I was younger, I used to think of myself as one of the ships. And more recently, I'm like, well, what if you could be the tide? And by doing what you do and going as you go up, then others around you are lifted too. And I don't know, I guess it's become almost a core philosophy now. It's a way I think about the world around me. Like if I'm going to bother to go do something excellent myself, the real reason I'm doing it is so I can be better and have like more resources to then help others be better too. Cause otherwise, like, am I just going to do it to be able to brag about it at the bar? Like, is that really the outcome I'm aiming at when I climb 100 peaks? Like, oh yeah. Fortune and fame, fortune and fame. Climbing 100 mountains is a quick way to do that.
So,
It, well, I mean, among us, you will have the fame, but the fortune will come. Fortune will come.
Very good. Well, Jason, it was so nice to have you back here again. And it's, you know, exciting to watch your journeys here and to make that connection again. So we really appreciate you spending the time with us and with our listeners, and can only imagine what I do have one closing question, though. I got to ask you, too. You have the most amazing fucking hats. Where do you get all that, man? You got you got some really great hats.
So. I am all about the hats, and it's totally not because my hairline is starting to recede at 33 years old. It's just because I love hats. No, I will not take my hat off to prove that. But yeah, I guess when brands notice that you like to wear hats, they send you hats, and occasionally they make some good ones. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah, this one's by Leckie, the trekking pole company.
Nice.
Yeah, ended up with one of their hats. It's nice. I like it. It fits. It's good. It's not one where you can really pop the bill, which is my normal style. The popped bill. Been recently rocking. I got a really fun one. Have you guys heard of Path Projects?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, they did a collaboration with Billy Yang. For one of his films, and they released a hat that was kind of done up in his style with some like topographical map lines. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's, you know, topographical maps of mountains. Like that's exactly my style. So that's been a favorite go-to hat. It kind of has the shorter brim on it. So you can pop it down. It still keeps the sun out of your eyes, but then it's like, and the reason I do, there's actually a reason. Some people think I just
looks. I get it. I get it already. Like you're sick of banging your fucking head on trees. No,
that's half the reason. But when you climb fifth class terrain, and so you have to look up steep terrain to look for your holds. If the brim is down, you have to like crane your neck back so hard that it hurts. So by popping the bill up, you can just like casually look up without having to like crank your neck. I'll pop it up while I'm climbing the terrain, as long as the sun's not in my eyes. And then it just stays there until I turn and the sun is in my eyes, and then I pop it down. So there is a rhyme or reason to why I do that. Heard it here first, folks. You heard it here.
Okay. First. Now we know. So now if I do that, I can tell people that's why I do it.
Exactly. It's because you're out there free soloing fifth class terrain. You're practically Alex Honnold.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
That is awesome. Well, again, Jason, thanks so much. And definitely want to have you back again and talk about the next adventure. So for all of our listeners, if you've made it this far, of course, seek professional help. And we'll see you all in a mile.
Mile and a half.
Mile and a half.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Yay!
Woo! All right.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, man. So great. Thank you so much. You're so inspiring. It just, It's really cool. Besides, you know, the FKTs and all of that, I just who you are as an individual and as a human, it's very inspiring. And I just loved it to hear you. And I remember last time when we had you on, I went for a run a couple of days later with some friends, and like, I, by the end of the run, I was like, all right, so I guess you guys don't need to listen to the podcast because I told you the whole thing. Like, I was like, and then he said this, and then he said that. And
she's killing your listener, listener count.
I know. There were just many like nuggets
As long as they're still subscribed, we're good, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell them, save it for the podcast.
So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I do appreciate you saying that. I've been pondering this a lot recently because, you know, I finished up a 4-year project in my life. Like, it wasn't just the Bulgers. It was like, when I finished the Bulgers, I also finished this journey that's taken 4 years to get to 100 FKTs. Mm. And, you know, it like begs the question, like, well, why do I do things like this? And why have I aimed at this? Was, you know, and I know some of it, you know, is the ADHD, being the kid who couldn't sit still, and like then finding identity and success in moving my body and being good at moving my body. But something else I've realized, because it's like, I knew I became a teacher because I love teaching. I love the act of creating that aha moment for another human being where they become able to think about something in a new way or do something they couldn't do. And I think what I've sort of become profoundly aware of is that, you know, sort of like I alluded to while we were still on the air, was this idea that, you know, it's like the old Chinese proverb, no stream can rise higher than its source. You know, this idea that you need to seek the highest form of wisdom you can. I was like, okay, well, I think what I've been doing is I'm trying to make myself a higher and higher source by, you know, the only medium I can understand is by doing these physical undertakings, because I'm not very smart. So I just go do stuff with my body. And so it's like, well, I'm aiming at harder and harder things to do in hopes that I can turn around and do some good with it. And that's the thing I'm realizing. It's like, there's always been that hope that I can turn around and do something good with it. And that's always been a motivating factor of why I do the thing in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so like, it actually matters, and it means a lot to hear you say that's actually how it comes across. It's
not just
a thought in my head. Like, yeah. Oh, I think I'm an inspiring person. Maybe I say some good stuff. It's like, to hear that it does resonate and it does do some good.
It absolutely does.
Meaning and trickles its way out into the world.
Yeah, it really does. So you're doing good. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And I would absolutely be excited to come back on again.
Yay!
You know, after your listeners have had some time to forget the trauma of this episode.
We'll just traumatize it with something else.
Yeah.
It's always a good episode if I'm not saying a lot. Because I'm listening, you know, I'm like, oh, this is, and like,
that's good stuff.
But just checking out some of the stuff on like the new stuff. Like, we were talking about it last week when like art, I love being proved wrong, just because it's like, I can make these huge, like, oh, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Then I'm like, no, change my mind. And when we were looking on the website, I saw that somebody had put up a route in Connecticut that was, it links up a bunch of these 5.8 climbs. So it's a run on the ridge on the Metacomet Trail, where Art was telling, you know, that 112, that's one of the trails of the 112. It's like the first 62 miles. But there's a section that, I guess it's like a 20 mile traverse that links up 10 of the peaks, which are, you know, they're relative. They're between like 800 and 1200 feet tall, but there's a little bit of prominence, you know, maybe 200 or 300 feet, whatever. But like, I guess the way they put the route, it goes up some of these climbs, and they're all like 5.8s, whatever. And it's like, see, that's kind of cool. Like, I'm like, that's the stuff, because not to say like the running stuff isn't, but like, I think the stuff that you're doing and stuff that, like, you know, like Anton, like, I remember the Long's Peak thing, but like this picnic stuff, like, this is interesting. This is kind of when I want to see the sport go, right? Like, it makes it more interesting than someone going out and doing, you know, like I'd said, like the Mike Wardian did the Penn Station to Penn Station thing. I'm like, that to me is kind of boring, but like spending, you know, doing two different disciplines or even three different disciplines is really interesting. And it's kind of got my mind going now, like, what can be done?
Well, and I think it's interesting when you start to think of what the spectator side of FKT will be. So if like, if this website that I helped these guys develop for this SPS thing with this 3D mm-hmm. live tracking, one of the other things, this guy's an amazing programmer for like 3D rendering. Cause his main job is he helps computers understand how to show us visually where satellites are orbiting around Earth in space. Like he's a person that's capable of doing that way beyond me. So it's not a hard job for him to go, oh, I can put a photo. I can have a photo sit in a 3D map exactly as it would be oriented. If you were standing there. So he's like created this integration for photo and video where you can play. If you go to the website, you can check this out with some of the peaks he's already climbed. If you go to the peak list, you can actually play through the GPX file. And it's sort of like, you guys have seen that Relive app.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It's like that. But when the photos, when it's time for a photo to pop up, you actually fly in and swing into the spot and you see the photo sitting in the 3D horizon, exactly lined up.
Wow.
And so if you think about that, like for,
it's like street view for the mountains.
It's like street view for the mountains. If that becomes an even like, imagine that just getting better over the next say decade, like you'd be able to sit back and watch a person like throwing footage from doing this wild fifth class compelling route where you're like palms are sweating. You know, we all watched probably the Free Solo documentary you remember like sitting on the edge of your seat and your hands were sweating and you're like, I know he lives. Why is my body doing this? It's like that, but except you don't know if the person's going to live. So it becomes this real,
we could bet on this.
So yeah, I mean, I think we already see big races going this way where they're really trying hard to like bring people into live experiences with the big races to make it more spectator friendly. And I think FKTs for American running culture are just a key part of how Americans can express their mountain running skill. And so therefore having that watchability element is going to be something that's going to grow in the future. This is actually one of the conversations I'm having with Outside.
If you think about like a lot of people were when Scott was finishing up the AT, right? I mean, everybody, not everybody, but I was, I don't know. It was like a crazy amount of time and I'm just like hitting refresh, waiting for that next ping on the map to get him a little bit closer. And I'm like, yeah, he's got it, right? Yeah, I think he's got it, you know, and you know, but you wonder, oh, is this thing working? Or I've had, you know, friends do FKTs where you're watching that thing and you're like, what the fuck are they doing over there? You know, at the last minute. We're watching the Livingstons, you know, 200 miles plus in, and they're like, okay, you guys are lost. And you're like 5 miles from the finish. What's going on? You know?
Yep.
So.
Yep. It's definitely, there's some suspense to it. And yeah, I think it's going to be cool to see that side grow. Not that I'm much of a spectator myself, but I think that's one of the things FKTs, as far as like a storytelling element, have in their favor, is there are a lot of beautiful race courses in the United States, but we are kind of hamstrung by our inability to host races in some of the most beautiful places in the United States. And on some terrain that like you couldn't necessarily get insurance and a permit to like have people race on. But visually when you put a camera out there, it's like such beautiful terrain to see a human like moving through. And so there's such a powerful storytelling element to seeing these spaces depicted that I think, yeah, it seems obvious and apparent to me that we're going to see more and more and more like money and funding go into like pulling these spaces out and showing them to people. Because yeah, it's some of our most beautiful areas. So why wouldn't that also happen? Because it's happening in other places. So why wouldn't it also be happening in the races and events that go through? So yeah, it's cool to me. It feels like there's lots of ways that this thing is still going to grow. You know, you mentioned like 2020 being the boom year, like you're a little too late outside. It's like, I mean, that was the boom year for people participating, but now so many people are aware of FKTs and that they're a thing. And so even for the people who don't necessarily want to go do one themselves, they at least are clued in enough that if a really good way of showing one in, you know, as you mentioned, you know, with Jurek and the record, even though it was just dot watching, you know, thousands of people were just sitting there refreshing over and over again, right? If that's what they're willing to do, watching a dot on a two-dimensional map, imagine if there was three dimensions and some video and some photo that popped up in there in near real time.
Right.
Yeah. Or how about like waiting on, you know, for Barclays, waiting for the next tweet, right? I mean, you know, everybody, you know, everybody's all checking that out. And that's like, it's like no technology whatsoever, you know? So,
yeah. But. Yeah. People are, there's a decent number of people that are really interested in this stuff, even if they don't want to go run it or do it themselves. I think, what is it? Finn Magnusson. Yeah. With the single track podcast. That's what he says. One of his missions is with his podcast is he's like, oh, I want to make fans of trail running a thing. Like I want there to be fan people of the sport.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's cool. That's a cool thought. Like, yeah, why shouldn't there be?
Right.
So
yeah.
Very good.